In The King of Staten Island, comedian Pete Davidson plays a wayward stoner whose life isn't going anywhere. He still lives with his mom, he doesn't have a job, and his plans for his life involve a vague and foolish plan to open a tattoo restaurant.
The film is directed by Judd Apatow, who also made Knocked Up, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and Trainwreck. Apatow's movies often involve a protagonist who faces some sort of need to grow up, and The King of Staten Island may feature the biggest reclamation project yet. Davidson's character barely functions as an adult, and through much of the film, we see a man-child with a lot of growing up to do. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. We're talking about The King of Staten Island on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Pretty Litter. Cats are notorious for hiding their illness. It's hard to tell if they're sick, but with Pretty Litter, you can keep tabs on your cat's health. Pretty Litter is kitty litter 2.0. It changes colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. Pretty Litter is made of super light crystals and naturally occurring minerals that are safe for your cat. Switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code HAPPYHOUR for 20% off your first order.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Also with us is our pal, writer Kat Chow. Hey, Kat.
Hey.
It is a pleasure to have you with us. Now, in some ways, The King of Staten Island mirrors the life story of its star, Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson's dad was a firefighter who died when Pete Davidson was a kid. He smokes a lot of pot. He lives with mental illness. As we mentioned, Judd Apatow directs, and Pete Davidson's co-stars include Marissa Tomei, who plays his mom. Bill Burr plays her love interest, who's also a firefighter. Plus, there are performances from Maude Apatow, Bell Powley, Steve Buscemi, and many others. Glenn, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of The King of Staten Island?
Okay, well, historically, Pete Davidson is a guy whose appeal I have noted intellectually, maybe not deeply felt, and whose comedy I haven't so much, what is the word, got. But that doesn't matter, right? Because I don't have to get it, because there are plenty of comics out there who I deeply respect, who deeply get this guy, like John Mulaney and Bill Hader. They love him and they love his comedy. There is a wounded quality to his comic persona, right? Something vulnerable, kind of hangdog. And when this film started, I thought we were going to get a very different kind of Pete Davidson origin story. He says he doesn't care about his dead father in one of the film's very early scenes. So I thought, okay, this is what the arc of this movie is going to be. That conviction is going to crumble. He might get a Goodwill Hunting, It's Not Your Fault breakthrough scene, and he'll get in touch with his feelings and begin the process of healing. That's what I thought this film was going to be. And maybe if it wasn't directed by Judd Apatow, it might have a tight narrative arc like that, but Apatow doesn't do tight narrative arcs. Because his sensibility is so beholden to improv, his films have a more, if you're feeling generous, a very lived-in quality, and if you're feeling less generous, they're a little shaggy. You kind of shamble through the story. So this isn't about a character's emotional walls crumbling down, because this is Pete Davidson. He doesn't have emotional walls. He's apparently has an emotional shower curtain. This guy is an open wound from the jump. And if I have a quibble with the film, it's that there's a on-the-nose quality to a lot of the dialogue, which might be a byproduct of how much it leans on improv, because the characters tend to tell us things that are already very clear. They repeat certain beats. And the film is counting on the vulnerability of Pete Davidson to carry us past the fact that the character he plays, Scott, isn't just another Apatowian self-involved man-boy, although he is that. He's not just self-involved, he's selfish and frequently cruel. I did end up liking this film a lot, but I don't lay that at the feet of Pete Davidson. I lay that at the feet of this amazing supporting cast, mm-hmm. who I just wanted to spend more time with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think that Pete Davidson had a lot riding on his shoulders for this, and I really commend what this movie is aiming to do in showing this kind of protracted grief, because I think that's really hard to show. In a lot of grief narratives, you usually start with a loss, and then it follows maybe the year or couple years after that. And so to really be able to try to dig into this was hard in general. And then, as Glenn is saying, Judd Apatow's style is very meandering, and I think that we really, really saw that. I read somewhere that Judd Apatow said he wanted to show sacrifice when he was writing this script with Pete Davidson. And at first, I had a lot of trouble understanding what the sacrifice really meant in terms of Scott's character just being so to borrow Glenn's language, a man boy. I mean, there are so many moments where I kept thinking, okay, where is this going to happen? Where is this growth happening? But I really saw, you know, these glimpses of true emotional grappling happen when he was engaging with his mother, played by Marissa Tomei, and his mother's new boyfriend, where the presence of this new firefighter in his life, this almost father figure, really brought on all of these unresolved feelings of grief. And grief can never really be resolved. It just changes shape based on where you are in life. And I think this movie really tried to address that and tried to show that and was successful in some of those closer moments with Scott and his mother and mother's boyfriend. But there were other parts where I just needed it to be pronounced a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think going into this movie on paper, I found myself questioning the need for it, just looking at the premise. I'm like, do we need yet another man boy, really? Do we need another, like, man boy, you know, who really should know better by now, learns to grow up? So I went in with my arms folded a little bit, and this movie did kind of break down my defenses over time. I think, as much as I agree with Glenn, I think it's an outstanding supporting cast. I generally come out on the positive side of the ledger with Judd Apatow, though I do find his movies kind of frustratingly slow-paced sometimes. I ultimately was very impressed by the performance by Pete Davidson, even though he is, by design, he is playing Pete Davidson. He's not necessarily showing an enormous amount of range in who he's playing. He's playing a version of himself, but he still manages to take this character who is extremely selfish, behaves, as Glenn said, cruelly, and yet you do still find yourself rooting for him to even have an arc. I ultimately found myself caring about whether this guy even has an arc, and I did appreciate that this movie, though it does, you can feel it start to steer itself into sentimentality a little bit about two-thirds of the way through, I did appreciate that it didn't give this guy an arc that didn't feel earned. It didn't give this guy an arc that was like more pronounced than a guy like that would have in real life.
Right,
I think
right.
Like, this is not a guy who comes out of a giant process, a like massively fundamentally changed person. He is still going to run into brick walls his whole life because of who he is and how he acts. And so I ultimately came down liking this movie, and I also found myself thinking, you know, this was supposed to screen at film festivals. This was supposed to get a big summer opening. Yeah. This was supposed to come out on June 19th. It was supposed to get like a big theatrical release. And instead, they kind of had to, due to world circumstances, put it out on video on demand. And I think this movie benefits from that. I think it benefits from home viewing, which gives you a chance to take those bathroom breaks, to kind of sometimes like sit with the characters for a few minutes before you go back in. I think the kind of easy pace and easy charm of this movie, I think, sits better at home than it would have in the theaters.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think the only thing I would do is I would adjust the fuel mixture here, because some of the story beats that Pete gets just get repeated. And they establish the character dynamics between two or more people, and those don't evolve. They just stay where they are. And that feels loose, and it maybe even feels kind of true to life, especially when a character is as stuck as this guy is. But to this film's eternal credit, we've already mentioned her, but it gives Marissa Tomei something to do, something substantial. She's great in the Spider-Man films. She's great in everything. Here, she got something to wrestle with. And also, Pamela Adlon, basically one scene, but she's so great. It's not an emotional scene. It's not a big scene. It is just, she's just so in that moment, so real. Pete's stoner friends, played by Moises Arias, Ricky Velez, and Lou Wilson, when I saw them, I was triggered and I was not down with them, because they remind me of every bullying dirtbag who made my childhood hell. But
oh, I liked some of those scenes though.
I know. They are so sweet and so charming and they win you over, but I do want to single out Belle Powley, who plays Kelsey, his sort of girlfriend. That part could have been such a type, such a cartoon. And she is so real and smart. That's the thing that this film is generous enough to allow her to be. She is not just successful, more successful than he is, because that is a low bar. She's very self-aware, and she's aware about what he is doing to his life or not doing to his life, as the case may be.
Right. And she kind of understands the circumstances and knows what she is owed in this, which I thought was a really outstanding choice on their part. Mm-hmm. The way that Ricky Velez played one of the stoner friends was, it kind of walked the line in some instances that made me uncomfortable. But then also there were some moments where you could just really see his genuine friendship with Pete Davidson. Mm-hmm. That opening establishing joke where they reveal that Scott's father is dead is a knock-knock joke where the punchline is, your dad's dead. And when I was reading about this, I saw that that was completely improvised. And right. I thought that that was a really organic moment to kind of reveal. And it just felt very true to life. There were moments, though, where the friends and the plot points that they introduced didn't really add up or make sense to me. The subplot where they decide to rob a pharmacy, and this does not give much away because there's really nothing that happens with that. It made me just deeply uncomfortable because you have these knucklehead 20-somethings going in and robbing a pharmacy, and the owner comes out with a gun, and then the cops are called. And I was just sitting there watching it, and I couldn't tell if my reaction to this, my complete distaste that I had in my mouth, was because of everything that's going on right now with protests around police brutality, or if it's just the whiteness of this movie, although it's Staten Island, which mm-hmm. is very white. It just made me feel all sorts of, like nothing happens with this, so why keep it?
I think the nothing happens with this, so why keep it, is a thought I had at several points in this movie. And I think it's one of the downsides of packing your movie with so many Apatowian slices of life. I mean,
yeah.
I think one of the issues that I had with the scene in the pharmacy is it involves ultimately kind of steering completely away from these characters. There are several characters who drop almost completely out of the movie without much
yeah.
resolution. There are long stretches of this movie where you're like, oh, right, he has a mom, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, because of the slight shapelessness of the plot. I do want to agree really strongly with something Glenn said about Marissa Tomei. And mm-hmm. Marissa Tomei is at a point in her very distinguished career where she's playing a lot of suffering moms, mm-hmm. or in the case of Spider-Man, suffering aunts. And there's a minor detail in this movie that when it surfaced, I just found myself really appreciating it. She has this romance with this firefighter played by Bill Burr. At some point, just the focus of the movie just decides to shift over to letting their budding romance just kind of play out a little bit. And like, you just get to see them have a few scenes where you see why they like each other and why they'd maybe be into each other. And it's separate from this, like, that focus on this one selfish dude at the center of the movie. And you're suddenly like seeing like, hey, there are other people in this guy's life and they are living lives separately from him. And I really appreciated that. I think it uses her really effectively, but it also shows that as selfish as the kid is at the center of this movie, his behavior has effects on lives that are also playing out
yes,
concurrently
yes.
with his own.
Yeah, I thought that was so well done. And just even the sister who is played by Maude Apatow, where, you know, she's the younger sister, and before she leaves for college, she sort of has this sit-down talk with him where she's like, you need to get your act together, watch over mom, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot of scenes like that in movies. It's a not uncommon narrative, but I think that the inclusion of these women in his family really, really benefited the plot and the movement a lot.
Yeah. You know what? I hope this film gets Staten Island some love because, you know, the character of Kelsey is a big booster of Staten Island, and she is absolutely right. It's got great views. Fantastic views.
Yeah. Those were nice views, those beaches.
Yeah. This place could use some love.
It could use some love, but like a lot of places like that, I wonder, like, it doesn't need too much love. You want people in Staten Island to get to keep living in Staten Island. So I'm
right,
torn
absolutely.
About giving any underrated place too much shine. Kat, do you have any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall this film was mostly very thoughtful and very tender in a lot of the relationships. One of the things that really seemed to stick out to me that I felt also was unnecessary was this recurring theme of jokes about children, where it seemed as though every time Scott appeared in a scene with a child, there had to be some acknowledgement of how strange or uncanny it was. And I could see this joke happening once, but the second, third time or so, it felt gratuitous in a way that started to make me think, this humor is just really not landing in this direction.
You mean jokes where, like, Pete Davidson is walking these kids to school and there's this kind of constant commentary on, like, is he
right.
a predator? Is he creepy?
Right. Or is he's dropping them off at daycare and why is he doing this? And, you know, maybe once to acknowledge the strangeness of a large adult man with a kid who might not be his, but it does not need to be pronounced.
Yeah, I hear that. I do think they're going for something there where I think they're trying to establish, like, this guy is in this very weird in-between place where, like, he has in some ways the kind of bearing and maturity level of a small child, but he is a fully grown 24-year-old adult man. And so, like, it is interesting. Like, I think the movie is kind of trying to place how he has aged out of his behavior in a little bit, but I hear you.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, and I think if you look at the progression of scenes with children, you know, where he's giving one a tattoo and then taking care of them, I could see that argument.
So I think we've got a little range of opinions about this movie, but on balance, I think we all found it interesting, right?
Yeah, sure. It was interesting. Not, you know, going to be in the top 10 movies of my life, but I think it was the specific lens of looking at grief, something that I was really intrigued by.
All right. Well, we want to know what you at home think about The King of Staten Island. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. Before we go, we wanted to let a few of our fourth chairs share what's making them happy this week. Take it away, Netta Ulaby.
You know what's making me happy? The new show Upload on Amazon Prime. Upload was created by Greg Daniels, the same guy who did The Office and Parks and Recreation and King of the Hill. But this one makes me think more of The Good Place. Upload is set in a not-too-distant future where after people die, their friends or relatives can pay for them to be uploaded into a virtual heaven. Wherever they go depends on class, of course, so you might end up in a sort of trailer park or you might end up in a luxury hotel. There are plenty of smart and funny jokes about bandwidth and algorithms, but Upload is really about questions like this. Is a person intellectual property? What do you owe someone who you know only as an avatar? How does technology enable our most selfish desires? In this show, people talk to their dead loved ones through computers, which doesn't feel that different from how many of us are interacting with each other right now. Surely Upload did not mean to be this prescient when it started raising the question, when you start life over in a different space, how much is it a chance to do things differently?
Hello again, Pop Culture Happy Hour Nation. Chris Klimek here. Now that the apocalypse that my viewing diet of dystopian sci-fi has been preparing me for my entire life is finally here, I find that what is making me happy is more in the vein of Toast of London. This is a British sitcom that initially aired on the BBC between 2013 and 2015. You can find it on Netflix now. It stars and was co-created by Matt Berry, who you may know more recently from the What We Do in the Shadows TV show. He plays Stephen Toast, a mediocre middle-aged actor who's lack of success has somehow gone to his head. He is very much in the tradition of comic characters who just don't see their circumstances clearly. His ambition is not really commensurate with his talent. There's a lot of fun satire of the pomposity and pretension of the theater scene here. I know I'm not the only person in the PCHH orbit with a sordid past as a theater critic who will just eat that stuff up, but it's more the absurd tone of the show. That's what I really respond to. There is more than a hint of Flight of the Conchords about this, right down to the fact that Matt Berry performs an original song in most episodes. And as a final bonus, Toast's agent is played by the great comic actor Dunne McKeegan. She's a genius. The show is hilarious. Toast of London.
Once again, Netta Ulaby recommends Upload on Amazon Prime, and Chris Klimek recommends Toast of London streaming on Netflix. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you both for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We'll see you all right back here on Friday when we'll be talking about the HBO Max documentary On the Record.
Hey,
Hey, I'm Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another. This week, Bobby Burke from the Netflix series Queer Eye shares the secrets behind the incredible home renovation seen on the show. Plus, he dispenses tips on how to make the most of your space during quarantine. Listen and subscribe to Ask Me Another from NPR.